Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McAndrew from The Athletic.
And Sean, I broke this news to you mere seconds ago. We don't have to worry anymore, folks. Everything's right in the world. The Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads have been returned to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah. And the thieves have been compromised to a permanent end, or is that...
It seems like the thieves have been compensated for the return of the... So that's almost compromised.
Crime paid.
Yeah. This is from... This is from an article by Gorp Wisniewski on ESPN.com. According to Penguins President of Business Operations Kevin Acklin, the team was notified last week that, quote, a special cargo recovery team negotiated the turn of the stolen property to a secure warehouse located in Ontario, California. Now, I guess it doesn't say that they, like, you know, transferred some money to an offshore bank account or something like that. I don't know what negotiated the return, you know, special cargo recovery team. This could have been a SEAL Team 6 scenario.
SEAL Team 68.
Okay. And then they did a big salute at the end.
Yeah.
So we don't have to worry.
I heard
anymore,
they negotiated the, they traded them for a bunch of Anson Carter bobbleheads.
Then, yeah, now they're going to go from a secure warehouse in Ontario, California, to a secure warehouse in Dallas, to a secure warehouse in Florida, to a secure warehouse in Calgary.
Yeah, I'm actually happy to hear this news, legitimately, because I had, when everyone else was having fun with this, I just assumed it was a stupid marketing.
Yeah, I did as well. You're right about that.
So this suggests that that is not the case.
Here's the thing. Prove to me that it's not. You know what I mean? It could still be. Oh, it the could. Special cargo recovery team, and then they release a funny video 3 weeks from now with, like, Sidney Crosby in, like, tactical gear.
Yeah. Because that's what we all want to see from the Penguins right now. A little bit of sketch
levity.
Comedy. Yeah.
You know, it's all going great out there. Actually, you know what? Okay. Let's actually talk about that. I had this on the outline for a different team, but let's talk about... So, early in the season, I'm sure people remember this. All the local... Man, maybe they don't. I don't know. All the local beat writers in Pittsburgh are like, this team is fucked. They are so bad. Holy shit. And we're all sitting there going, they'll be fine. Look, they got Sidney Crosby. They got Erik Karlsson. Kenny Malkin's on that team. Chris Letang. What's not to like? Look at all these all-stars. Turns out, those beat writers were correct. Very interesting turn of events. Usually, my take on when, like, you know, we're 20 games into the season and beat writers are panicking about how bad the team they cover is, I'm just like, whatever, we can write this off. And yet, here the Penguins are.
Yeah.
They stink.
They are not good. And they have been significantly not good over the last month, right around the time that Kyle Dubas was like, you know what? They're going to tell me what to do at the deadline.
they told them.
They were like, Kyle, FYI, buddy, we're absolute garbage.
Five games above NHL 500 at road, at home, five games below it on the road. They're 30-30-10, 70 points from 70 games.
Mm-hmm.
Dead even 500. Absolute. Hard to be in the NHL.
Dead even fake 500.
Hard to be.
Yeah.
The Calgary Flames are 507, you know? The Buffalo Sabres are 507. It's brutal, man. I don't know what they do.
Well, that's the question, right? Like, what?
Yeah, of course.
What do you do? And there was... Yeah, there has been, I would say... You tell me if you disagree, but I would say very muted, very half-hearted, like, oh, should Sidney Crosby go somewhere else? Takes from around the hockey world, but nobody seems to actually buy that.
Yeah, I mean, if you do that, like, Rob Rossi's going to mail you a picture of your house, right? Like, he's just going to be like, I just know that you, I want you to know that I know
like
what's
it
going
would be,
on.
Like, it would be a Sidney Crosby call.
Of course it would, yeah.
But even then, yeah.
No, I don't.
And Rob had a piece just a couple days ago where he was like, look, it's not happening.
Fun to pretend, though, isn't it?
It is kind of fun to pretend.
Just, you know, in much the same way the Stamkos sweepstakes of a few years ago, and I guess we'll get it again this summer, maybe.
Yep.
But a few years ago, more than a few years ago, maybe like almost a decade ago now that I say all this, the Stamkos, like, oh, he might leave Tampa. You never know. That was just fucking so fun to think about because superstar players don't move in this league, you know? Mm-hmm. Just, you know, the line of teams around the block to get fucking Sidney Crosby.
Well, a lot of people are saying, like, Colorado would be such a great
fit. Well, yeah, I mean, that's where his friend from yeah. home lives.
Yeah. But, no, assuming that's not where you go, because obviously if you move Crosby, you just strip it down to the studs.
Obviously, yeah.
But since you're not doing that, you're right. What do you do?
I don't know what the answer is.
What is the path to this team being better than it is this year? Forget about cup contending or whatever else. Just better than right now. Everyone gets a year older.
They have a little over $72 million committed to the salary cap for next season. What did they say the cap's going to be? Obviously, it's not finalized. It's like 87 and change, right?
Something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but yeah.
So leaves them about $15 million, and the only guy they have to I guess they have to re-sign Jansen Harkins. And
so there you go. There's your $15 million.
And Alex Nedeljkovic, or you know, a backup goalie. So they have money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know,
do you think any of that gets spent on bringing Jake Guentzel back?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it if I was them. As much as, obviously, Guentzel rocks. Like, he's a really good player. Look how he's doing in Carolina right now, you know? But you're going to be like, let's bring back the 30-year-old. Let's make it happen. Like, mm-hmm. they might not have a choice. And he's obviously, I think, pretty clearly the best free agent on the market this summer. But I don't know how you bring him back.
Would you move Erik Karlsson if you could in the offseason?
If you could, maybe. But, like, do you then have to eat salary? He's got a full no-move clause. You know, like, how many pass-throughs are we going to get before Erik Karlsson's back in Ottawa playing for, like, $8.50 an hour, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's
Ottawa would be the destination, and they would have to retain salary.
That's, yeah.
And part of what makes that difficult is if you're Ottawa, because he would presumably want to come here, here being Ottawa, where mm-hmm. I am, because he, you know, he likes it here. He still maintains a presence in the off season and that kind of thing. And it, in theory, could make more sense for the Senators, from a marketing standpoint and a making the fans happy standpoint, than simply what would happen on the ice, which means it might make more sense for them than any other team in the league.
Sure.
But if you make that deal and Pittsburgh retains, that's now two retentions on Karlsson, which would mean if Ottawa were to want to move him at some point in the future, they can't slice it down anymore.
Right. You should be able to retain as much as you want. Get a guy down to like $850,000.
Imagine what the deadline would be like then.
It would be
We have eight breaking trades.
And it's all just one guy getting traded, so he costs $125,000.
Yeah.
That's cool. This is a good idea.
We just go Zeno's paradox on guys' cap hits until it's literally a fistful of change.
Oh, is that the thing of like you can't divide?
That's the thing where you keep going halfway, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's right. That is interesting. What a crazy paradox.
Not to be confused with Zdeno's paradox, which mm-hmm. is...
You actually get to have the longest stick in the league because of how tall you are.
Exactly.
The rules don't apply to you at that point. Nah, I'm a big Fermi's paradox guy. You ever think about this one?
Yeah, that's a tough one, eh? Boy.
Where are they?
Where is everyone?
Yeah. It's interesting to think about and not scary at all.
No.
No, no, no. But yeah, the problem with trading Erik Karlsson is, okay, what do you do with that money? Obviously you're getting stuff back for him, but not like anything great, I wouldn't think.
No, I wouldn't imagine. I would put it this way. They didn't give up very much to get him in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be even less to flip him now.
Yep.
Again.
Aren't they talking about like, oh, we got to make some changes in the offseason in Ottawa? This is kind of beside the point of what we're talking about here, but.
Stability, man. Yeah. That's what they need in Ottawa.
I'm not joking. Like, didn't I see a report that like somebody's got to go there? Like they got to make some changes.
I feel like I
saw something about
that. You could see that view out there. I haven't heard it as something that is likely to happen. Other than they probably move one of the defensemen because they've got the three guys on the left and
yeah,
Carlson's a righty, so
he is. Now look, I mean, it's going to be hard for him to break into a lineup with Travis Hamonic as like the third best.
Well, that's defenseman. It. I mean, it's it is on paper. This Ottawa team is phenomenal, and I don't know if you saw, but they won two games over the weekend, so they're finishing strong.
That's right.
They're beating some good teams. They can build on this.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Just hold that football in place, and I'll be
on the way. The team that I wanted to talk about when I was talking about like panicky beat writers and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Boston Bruins. I wrote about them over the weekend. Like, I think they lost two in a row, and I don't know if they've played since I wrote about it. I'm not remembering off the top of my head.
They have not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay.
They've got Florida and Tampa tonight and tomorrow.
So yes, that's right. But, you know, it seems like the Bruins kind of suck too, man. Like, I know they have 97 points.
Yeah.
You know, but like, again, like all the locals are just like, this team kind of doesn't have it. And you're like, could that possibly be true? And then, you know, you watch them, the results keep coming in and you're like, oh yeah, I guess they go to overtime more than anybody in the league, basically.
There is that, right? Like, and in fact, I'm heartbroken to report that those two straight losses were in regulation, which means they now have more regulation losses than overtime losses.
Yeah, they are 6-15 after regulation.
Yeah. So what does that make them in regulation? Because isn't that what we're... Wouldn't that...
Oh, wait, no.
35
I might have done
and
the,
16?
I might have done the math wrong on this. Not 9-15. I wasn't counting shootouts.
All right. Well, as we should not.
Well, sure. It's a different discussion. But yeah, I mean, like, it's so funny because it's like, well, they're plus 41 in goal difference, right? So, like, even if we're saying, look, they're playing a lot of games with, like, a one goal or zero goal margin, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're still, when they win, it seems like they win 5-2, and every other game is a one goal win or loss.
Yeah. They've got Florida Tampa the next two nights.
Yep.
Then, and this is all on the road, then Washington, who are warm lately.
Yeah.
Nashville, who are red hot, then Carolina, then back home for Florida and Carolina again. So
And that closes out the regular season.
And that takes them almost, and then they finish with Pittsburgh, Washington, Ottawa. So, I mean, we'll have a pretty good sense in another week and a half of where they are. But they're going to play the Leafs in the first round, so
yeah,
who are we kidding?
The thing is, they're tied in points with Florida, and so in theory, they could finish first in that division and then get one of the wild card teams.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems like the most likely matchup is with the Leafs.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's another team where I'm just like, they're not like that. Like, they're good,
mm-hmm.
but let's be serious here, you know?
The Leafs have spent, like, the entire year being the 11th best team.
That's what I mean, yeah. They're a good team, but, like, it depends on how you define good, you know? Like, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think anybody thinks either of these teams is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender.
You wouldn't put the Bruins on your list of
No.
Legit contenders?
No.
Even with the goaltending? Even with?
Well, I put with the caveat that.
So.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Even with the caveat that any goalie can get hot and they have two of the best goalies in the league. The idea of Stanley Cup winning number one center Pavel Zacha. I just can't see it, man. You know?
That is fair.
Yeah. And we knew that was the problem in fucking August. We knew that was the problem in November. We knew that was the problem with the deadline. They didn't do anything to address it.
Can we just
and they don't really have the assets to do it. I get it, but yeah.
Can we just talk about the very tip top of the NHL standings
as sure we can.
Record this? Number one team in the league right now, New York Rangers, 98 points. Canucks, yep. 98 points.
Mm-hmm.
Panthers, 97. Avs, mm-hmm. 97. Carolina, mm-hmm. Dallas, Boston, all 97. There are seven teams within 1 point for the President's Trophy, a regular season award that we all agree means nothing and treat with basically contempt. But that
should
is
mean
still,
more, but
that is still pretty ridiculous. Who you got?
Of that group?
Out of that group.
I haven't looked at, like, schedule. It feels like schedules are going to make such a big deal, like strength of schedule remaining or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But which team do I think is the best of that group is probably Florida.
Yeah, I would say so, too.
On paper, anyway. Mm-hmm. In actual practice, like this is me saying, and of course I expect Sergei Bobrovsky to hold up for the entire rest of the regular season. I know it's only 11 games, but, you know. Carolina looks like they could have really straightened things out here. Yep. But
And Colorado and Dallas are both very, very high. I mean, Colorado's won 9 in a row. Dallas is keeping pace, which has sort of pushed Winnipeg into that dreaded 3 spot.
So. Yep. It's kind of a thing where I look at all of these teams and go, pretty obvious fatal flaw on this one. You know what I mean? Last year with the Bruins, you wouldn't have said there really was a weakness in their lineup. You know, if everybody's healthy and all that. Great, you know, really good number one center, pretty good number two. Two great defensemen, two great goalies, that, you know, elite wingers, that kind of thing. Okay, great, you know. Obviously they still lost in the first round, so who gives a shit about like being good on paper. But with the Rangers, I can point to problems. The Canucks, problems. Florida, the fewest problems probably. Colorado, Carolina, Dallas, Boston, depth issues at various positions, that kind of thing.
What this
Every
league
single
is designed
one.
For at this
Absolutely.
Point, right? This is...
This I would. Is, what I would love
the NHL.
What I would love, 3-way tie for the President's Trophy. It's very possible, only because all the teams you mentioned within 1 point, they're also within. There are four within one regulation win of each other.
Yes. Yep.
And I know there's probably other tiebreakers that I'm not remembering off the top of my head right now that would separate them, but I want like four teams with like 112 points.
Everybody gets a third of a banner.
That's what I'm saying. That would be cool and sick. But yeah, I'm sure there. It's like, well, now we got to look at your record in road games on Tuesday, and it's like, okay, well, the Canucks are in trouble here, you know. Right now, the league leader in regulation wins, the Vancouver Canucks and the Winnipeg Jets. You just mentioned them. Isn't that crazy? 39 apiece.
Yep.
Hey, while we're talking about the standings, you know it's a pretty big game tonight? Caps Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Caps 1 point up with a game in hand. But if they lose, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen yet this is the time of year where you start seeing the, like, if this team wins, the odds shift this way. If that team, I would imagine this one is probably the biggest of the year so far. I know last night's Vegas, St. Louis was another one that had a big swing, but this would kind of be, well, not it, because
no.
Islanders and Devils are still hanging around, and but a Washington win in regulation.
Caps are really rooting for a Rangers victory tonight. Because the Rangers are playing the Flyers.
Yep. That's right. I keep forgetting the Flyers' spot is very much up for grabs. But
they are 2 points ahead of – like, if the Capitals win tonight and the Flyers lose, the Capital, they are tied. So I don't know. It's all pretty interesting in my opinion. I
saw somebody – may have been Dom last night. Towards the end of that Vegas-St. Louis game when it was tied in regulation, saying the Blues should pull the goalie at the end of regulation and go for the regulation win. They didn't. But are you, like, if you're a coach in the NHL, are you starting to think about stuff like that? Because it feels like we almost never see it. We had, was it Minnesota a week or two ago? I don't think we got to talk about that. At least I did.
Yeah, pulling the goalie.
That's gone.
Yeah.
Pulling the goalie in overtime to get the win that would help in the tiebreaker. I don't know. I wonder if we'll see it. Like, I Detroit, Washington maybe feels too early for that. If you're, you know, if you're Detroit, obviously you want to win in regulation and move past them, but I don't know that you risk the free point by doing that yet. We're getting close to that time of year. I wonder if that's going to be the next thing we start seeing coaches do.
Yeah, the thing frequently with the Blues, like, just trying to go for it, because they're 5 points out with an extra game played.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it makes sense, but if you do it and you lose on an empty netter, it makes the coach look like an asshole, and he's like kind of playing for his job, you know?
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, they ended up losing in overtime, so.
Right. They got the point out of it.
Yeah. They got one more point, but really didn't. I mean, they're all but done now.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. It's one of those.
But I mean, they were all but done 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We just, because Vegas had all their injuries or whatever, and now they've won three straight, I think. We at least had to pretend like, oh, you know, the Blues and the Wild are in it. And it's like, and over the next 2 weeks, the Blues and the Wild were like, we're actually.
So hold
not,
on. Are you, good. Are we getting the RL, I've seen enough?
The Western, on the Western Conference? Yes, absolutely. Okay. I think we're done here.
All right.
I just can't see St. Louis making up 5 points on even an injured Vegas with an extra game played. That's a huge. Again, you get to pretend it's close. It's not that close. I will issue no such proclamation about the Eastern Conference, though.
Mm-hmm. Although we could be getting close on that.
Yeah, but only because of the Flyers. Everything else is, like, you know, pretty settled. Again, Tampa's up 6 points on Washington.
Yeah, Tampa's in.
Yeah, I think. I saw the odds this morning, and they're at like 98% or something.
So it is this weird thing where you've got kind of two spots up for grabs, Philly and Washington, but Detroit can only catch one of those teams.
Right.
Whereas the Islanders and I guess Devils have both those spots to aim at.
It's true. Right now, Philly 87, this is according to MoneyPuck, Philly 87%, Washington 59%, Detroit 36%. God, that's got to, man, if you're a Detroit fan and all year you were just like, they're going to make the playoffs. Holy
the
shit.
Vibes were so good.
Sorry, man, we're still the Red Wings at the end.
If they miss, you know? Does, like, I feel like we say this every year, but does anything blow back on Steve Yzerman after essentially taking the deadline off?
I mean, what are they going to do? Fucking fire Steve Yzerman?
I'm not, no, you know, obviously, like, not. But I mean, is a single Red Wing fan out there going to express any doubt?
I have already seen, at any point? I've already seen, like, months ago. Like, what are we doing with this fucking Iser plan here?
Okay.
You know, I've seen it already, and I do feel like he caught maybe a little bit of flack at the deadline, but at least then you could say, well, when Dylan Larkin comes back, .. And, you know, he helped for a minute there. But, you know, I just think the sand's kind of running out of the hourglass for these guys. No, it hasn't yet because the team in front of them is the Washington Capitals, right? But, I mean, look, my big thing is we should just decide this all on goal difference. Like, the fact that a minus 27 team right now is in a playoff spot is a fucking joke.
Okay.
But they're never going to do it on just goal difference, right? So
no.
We don't have to.
Well, it would be fun to watch like teams try to run up the score on.
That's what I mean. Like, we want to talk about, let's do scoring. Let's boost scoring. Do scoring, what a stupid thing to say. Let's boost scoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be a great way to do that is like if you go like, "Hey, Edmonton Oilers, you know, it would really help is if you ran your number one power play unit the full 2 minutes every power play all season."
Mm-hmm.
You'd see a lot of goals that way.
You would.
Just something.
We'd have to take the empty netters out. But
I don't think so. I think that's part of the calculated risk.
Yeah, but then what happens when a team pulls its goalie and gives up like four empty net goals, and those four goals help that other team make the playoffs over somebody else?
That's hockey, baby.
All right. I'm in. Thank you.
All right. Hey, speaking of goals, Zach Hyman and Sam Reinhart both hit 50 goals over the weekend. But let me start you with this stat. I saw Austin Matthews scored an empty net goal for his 58th of the year the other night. Did you know that's his first empty net goal of the season?
I did, because I had seen that like a couple of days ago. Someone had pointed out that he had no empty net goals. And then he immediately put an end to that. But yeah, it's impressive.
Well, I mean, it is impressive, but also it's like, I need this guy out there scoring. Like, he's not going to get to 70 now. And I'll just go, well, you only scored the one empty netter all year. Alex Ovechkin knows, you know, go pop like four or five into an empty net.
Dude,
they all count the same, you know?
That was my, I don't remember what video game it was that like was the first that I played where you could control your own guy.
Yeah.
But that was basically, I just sat on the bench until my team was up by a goal.
Yeah, you hit Y for putting me in, coach.
Yeah. Then you jump over the boards, demand a pass, and I think I got to 50 goals that year.
No problem. That's right. But yeah, Hyman and Reinhart at 50. Never thought I'd be saying that about those two guys.
No.
50 goals for those two.
So everybody wants to know. Fake?
I don't know if the word is fake.
Okay.
With Hyman, it's like, well, look who he gets to play with. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. Is it fake that all these guys who played with Joe Thornton scored like 40 or 50 goals?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that means it's fake. It's definitely, I don't know if you know this in like marathon running, if the wind is at the runner's back for the majority of the race, they say it's like a wind assisted time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to say he didn't run that fast, but I am going to say, look, the Zephyrs were really stepping up to help him out here. I got no problem with it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Look, anybody scores 50. I remember an era early in my NHL watching days when like the Rocket Richard winner had like 41 goals.
Yeah. Is your buddy Rick Nash?
Was that the year it was Kovalchuk, Nash, and Iginla all at once?
Yes, that sounds right. There was a three-way tie the one year.
Yeah, pretty cool. Again, I like when there's a big tie at the top of the standings, you know? But, yeah, Sam Reinhart, it's just like, I'm not going to be like mad at the guy for shooting 26%, you know? But if my team signed Sam Reinhart in the summer going, look, we just got a 50 goal score. It's like, did you though, man? I don't like, you could say that, but I don't, I don't know.
Yep. I know. I would agree on that. And some team will, because this is, he's having the mother of all contract years.
Yeah. Great. Awesome for him. He deserves it. Why not? You know, if you can trick one person into giving you like an extra $2 million a year more than you deserve, that's the greatest trick you're ever going to pull in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only two other, maybe three. Okay. MacKinnon, Pastrnak, and Panarin, 44 or 43 goals each. I guess the 50s in reach for those guys, but I, you know, they'd have to pick it up a little bit, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Possible, for sure. But yeah, so to celebrate our friends Zach Hyman and Sam Reinhart getting to 50, I have asked Sean to pull a list of one-time 50 goal scorers in the cap era.
Yes. Well, what I've got is I've got the list, the entire list, and then we'll just go back as far as you would like. But I can tell you, according to Hockey Reference, I just found this interesting, there have been exactly 100 50 goal scorers.
Ever in the history of the league?
100 players, including Reinhart and Zach Hyman, who have scored 50 goals at least once. So 100 different players.
Okay.
Would you like to guess how many of those did it multiple times versus how many are one-timers?
I'm going to guess 35.
For 35 multiples or 35 one-time?
35 did it multiple times.
There are 47. It's almost a 50-50 split. Huh. 47 players have done it at least twice. 53, my math would say, have done it once. And of those, you said the cap era.
Yeah.
There would appear to be an even dozen players.
A dozen in the cap era.
Who scored, so to be clear, this is guys who scored 50 goals once in their career, and it happened in the cap era. So not guys who scored 50 multiple times, but only once in the cap era.
Right.
There are 12 cap era 50 goal scorers, and there is a vast range of fakeness here. On
see, that's what I'm here to talk about.
Yeah,
this is what it's all about for me. All right, we just talked about him yesterday, so this is kind of top of mind on the bonus episode. We mentioned Chris Kreider. I know that guy's only got the 150 goals.
He does, yeah.
Hyman and Reinhart, obviously, as well.
Hyman and Reinhart are two of them. Of the other 10, Chris Kreider is one of them, yes.
Okay. Jonathan Chichu, he only did it once. Yep. Mm-hmm. Did he get to 60?
Sort of alluded to him. I think, I want to say 56.
Still a good number, especially in those days.
I could simply click on the link and see it. Yeah, 56. League leading.
56. Hey, speaking of the early days of the cap era, I think Jágr got to 50 one time.
He may have, but he would have had other ones.
Oh, sure. Prior. Of course. So right.
He has three in his career. The most recent being in 2006. So he did do it once in the cap era.
Yeah, but what am I saying? Of course. Stupid fucking thing for me to say. Anybody else really springing to mind? I know Crosby had the 150 goal season, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not
Sidney
sure
Crosby
if I want to commit.
The list.
Okay. Yeah,
you can commit. Sidney Crosby has only one 50 goal season. That was one of the guys on this list that I would consider a surprise.
Yeah, I just remember there was like the one year he did score 50, I believe he won the Rocket Richard. And it was a thing where they, like, all summer people were like, Sidney Crosby has determined that he will be scoring 50 goals this year.
Yeah.
And then he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty sick. Like, they were just like, all he did all summer was work on his shot. And I was like, uh-oh, bad news for everybody else.
Sure.
I'm trying to think who else.
There were four guys last year who scored 50 goals, and it is the only time in their career that they've scored 50. So far, of course.
Okay. I know Rantanen got to 50-something last year.
Yep. Rantanen is one of them.
Pasternak? I know he got to 60, but is that the 60, only...
So that's the only one of his career.
I just realized what I was thinking of. He was very close to 50 when they shut the season down for COVID.
Oh, okay. Yep.
I'm pretty sure that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Surely McDavid, was that his 150 goal season and he got to 60?
It was, yep. That's the only time he has done it. And by the way, Pasternak had 48 in the COVID season, won the Rocket Richard that year, because obviously nobody got to 50 because of the shortened season, but yeah. McDavid is another one, and then the other guy from last year is a guy, I gotta be honest, I completely forgot this guy hit 50. I see his name, I go, yep, I remember that, but no real recollection of it.
Okay, Dreisaitl's done it more than once for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a hint.
Center, which is
okay.
Rare.
Not helpful, but... there's a lot of centers out there.
Well, there's a lot of centers, but not a lot of them that score goals. Would not be considered the best offensive player on his own team, despite being a 50-goal scorer. Has passed 40 this year, so not...
Past 40 this year.
I was, one hit one.
Okay, well, I was just looking at the list of guys who are over 40. I'm turning away from my screen where the tab is still open. Over 40 or at 40?
He is, I believe, over 40. Allow me to click on him again. He is at 41, 41. On the season. Has never had 100 points, which is kind of interesting. Both as a guy who scores a lot of goals, as a center, usually they're...
Sure, yeah, a lot of assists.
And also, given his reputation, I'm a little surprised that he's never had 100 points because
because I had just seen the list and he's not the best offensive player on his own team and it's not Leon Dreisaitl, it's got to be Braden Point.
It is indeed Braden Point. Yeah.
Good player.
Yep.
But I think the reputational... thing there is that he scores a lot of goals in the playoffs.
I was about to say that he has a reputation as a playoff performer. Yeah. Well earned, by the way.
Of course. Goes without saying.
There are three other guys, and I'll just kind of real quick. One of them I would consider a very big star in the league. I'm a little bit surprised that he only has the 150 goal year. Another guy is a classic. Not one hit wonder, but a classic like Chris Kreider style. Everything came together in one year. And then the third guy, it's from 2007. I did not remember that this guy ever got to 50. He's a good player, but.
Am I remembering right that Eric Staal had a 50 goal season?
I don't believe he did. No, he is not on the list. He had a 100 point season, which I think
maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Oh, I bet he got to like 40 and 100 or something like that, and that's why it's standing out in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 07, everything came together for him. Is that what? Am I getting that right, or is that two different guys?
I would say two different guys. Although this guy is not necessarily far off. This guy, 2007, he was actually the Rocket Richard winner that year.
Okay.
Had a very weird career.
Weird overall, career.
I would just say in terms of ups and downs, not going to the Hall of Fame, a guy who would probably be considered
not a Hall of Famer.
Disappointing career, but also had some big seasons.
Had some big seasons. Disappointing.
This was his
career.
One and only Rocket Richard. It was... His best other year was 40 goals. He had that the very next year.
I'm thinking back for Rocket Richard guys.
Mm-hmm. Kind of peaked and then sort of fell off a cliff after this. Well, that's harsh, but...
Did Vinny LeCavalier have a Rocket Richard? Yeah. I do seem to recall that.
52 goals.
He got to 52. Good for him.
Yep. He scored 420 goals in his career, but fell short of 1,000 points. You know, number one overall pick, never won an award, never. Yeah.
I mean,
it's dicey. The other guys
injuries caught up with him, right? Like he just kind of. Am I right about that?
That was part of it. Yep. Got bought out, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other two guys, both of them are still active today.
Though
both of them scored their 50 over 10 years ago.
Okay.
One of them's like, I mean, this guy's even more of a Chris Kreider, I would argue, because let me see. This guy, what his other career high? He had one other season where he got to 40.
Okay.
And there is something else about this season that is probably even more memorable than the 50 goals. He scored 50 on the nose, by the way.
Okay. I mean, that that doesn't help me, I guess. Let's see here. Something he did this season that was notable? And he scored 50 10 years
ago? No, I was saying there was something the season that he scored 50, although he has had a notable year this year as well.
Oh, I see. Notable year this year. The season he scored 50 was notable for something beyond scoring 50 goals?
Yes.
What could that mean? Give me a division this guy was in.
At the time,
or is in. I don't know.
The team at the time was the Pacific Division. I can't even remember what the division alignments were back then, but
okay.
Most associated with a Pacific Division team.
Most associated with a Pacific Division team. And Marlowe never got to 50. Thornton obviously never got to 50. I wonder what Joe Thornton's career high in goals is. Like 35,
that's
maybe?
A good one. I will look that up while you continue to struggle with
Who else is in the Pacific? Vancouver. I don't think they've had a 50 goal scorer in recent years. Oh, one of the Sedins might have. Is it a Sedin?
No, it's not.
Okay.
But you're getting warmer.
Getting warmer.
By the way, Joe Thornton had a 37 and a 36 goal season, but both with Boston. He never got to 30 goals in San Jose.
When I really started like coming online as a, as an NHL fan, I do seem to recall Thornton had like that one really big season in Boston, like 105 points or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the years he scored a lot of goals. Okay. Another 50. Did Getzlaf score 50?
No. Don't believe he did.
Who the hell is it? Stars of the Pacific Division. And you're right. Now I'm struggling to remember who would have been in the Pacific apart from the three California teams.
Half the listeners are screaming right now, and the other half are frantically.
Well, I'm trying. I'm just
same as you.
Because Edmonton and Calgary used to be, or I guess they still are in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. But like, I can't think of anybody from Calgary besides Ginland. Obviously, he did it more than once. And nobody from Edmonton besides Dreisaitl and McDavid.
Well, I'll tell you, you've already hit this guy's team and moved past it.
Okay. Well, that doesn't. I've named every team in the Pacific, so that doesn't actually fucking help me at all.
Don't think you did Vegas, actually. But.
Oh, that's true. And nope, I don't think anybody from Vegas has ever had a 50 goal season. Okay, so I don't think Pavelski or Couture ever had it. Had 50. I'm almost certain no one from Kopitar. No.
Nope.
Oh, I got it. It's Corey Perry.
It is Corey Perry.
Yep.
That one year where
he won the MVP.
Won the MVP, which was the more notable thing, and won it from a Sedin who was more deserving. Which
that's why you said I was warm. Okay. Yep. There's one more.
One other guy, a teammate of somebody we've already talked about on this list.
A teammate of someone we've already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Of a guy who has just a 150 goal season?
Yes.
Okay, so Braden Point. Vinny LeCalier. Martin Saint-Louis didn't do it, did he? No?
No, I don't believe he did.
Who else would be on this list? Marchand never got there. No one on the Bruins ever got there besides Pasternak, I don't think. Is it Malkin?
It is, yep.
Yeah, there you go. We did it.
1 year. Just to throw out some other names of guys who only had one 50-goal season that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Kariya.
I wouldn't have guessed that he even got to 50, so good for him.
He had the one in 96. Sergei Fedorov, Mike Modano, both in the one-timers club.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah. Mike Gartner, somewhat surprising as a guy who, you know, famously scored 30 goals each and every year, but only got to 50 once. Dale Hawerchuk. Only once. Mark Messier just once.
Wow, that's shocking given the sheer volume of points he had.
Mark Messier did it once and it was 82. So, I mean, that way. And in fact, I want to say that was back when he was a winger. And maybe the most surprising of all, although it makes perfect sense when you actually think about it, Rocket Richard himself only ever got there one time.
Well, there you go.
There you go. A little 50-goal trivia for you, folks.
Yeah. And on that note, why don't we take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about some other stuff. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by ExpressVPN. And folks, going online without ExpressVPN, it's like changing while leaving your curtains wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give random creeps a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, internet service providers can see every website you visit, every single one. Can you believe that? And then, this is the messed up part, they can legally sell that information without you signing anything or any of that kind of stuff to ad companies and tech giants who then use your data to target you for ads and things that you don't want to see. Nasty. That's why I like ExpressVPN. ISPs can't track your online activity. Your identity is anonymized by a secure VPN server. Your data is also encrypted for maximum protection. You fire up the app, click one button, it's working. You can use it on all your devices too. Phones, laptops, even routers. So everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can be protected. Now, I've talked before about how I use ExpressVPN when I'm out and about and I'm covering games at college rinks or I'm writing in a cafe or another public space. I don't want to connect my devices to a network. I don't know what's going on with it. I don't control it, you know? I don't know who else is on it. That's why ExpressVPN is so important. No matter where you are, you just click the button, it's working. You're connected to a secure server, nothing to worry about. So here's what you're going to want to do. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/puck today. That's expressvpn.com/puck, P-U-C-K. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. ExpressVPN.com/puck.
This week's episode is brought to you by Game Time, our good friends at the Game Time app, my favorite app for finding and buying tickets to sporting events, as well as comedy, shows, concerts, of course, any number of things. I'm heading to Toronto this weekend and was scrolling through Game Time just the other day, trying to see if there's anything going on over the weekend that maybe might want to take family to, take the wife, take my dad. I don't know. I saw a few things. There's an Ali Wong show. I've never seen her live, but might have to go and check that out. She's very, very good. And I know that if I choose to do that, Game Time will hook me up and I will get a good deal. I will get good seats, and those seats will look exactly like I come in expecting them to, because I will be able to have the seat preview, those seat views. That's a big one for me. I hate getting to an event and finding out that I'm not sitting where I thought or that the view is not what I thought. Don't got to worry about that with Game Time. And you're also going to get those last-minute deals. You can save up to 60% off by buying last-minute for sports, concerts, comedy theater, etc. Plus flash deals, zone deals. It is all in pricing, so none of this where you get to the very end and suddenly the number's a lot higher than you expect. And in fact, it is a lowest price guarantee. And in addition to all of that, your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and then use the code PUCK for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, you create an account, you redeem the code PUCK, P-U-C-K, you're going to get $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
All right, we're back. And hey, we were just talking about the Rocket Richard and all this kind of thing. So let's talk about some other rewards, in large part because over the weekend, I saw an article saying Artemi Panarin deserves to win the Hart Trophy.
Now, did it say he deserves to win, or was it one of these, he deserves to be in the conversation? Because we're time of year.
Yeah, let me double check on that.
The time of year when people begin to lobby for their player to finish like fourth.
Rangers Artemi Panarin more than worthy of NHL's top honor, says the headline.
Mm.
More than worthy.
More than worthy. But then other people are also more than worthy. So
that is the core of what the Hart Memorial Trophy is awarded for. And that is why the Russian star wing, or the star Russian wing, should be the front runner for the honor.
Okay. There you go. That's, was that Larry Brooks or someone else?
That was Molly Walker.
Okay.
The front runner for the award.
We're definitely in lobbying season. We had a big, we had another Calder piece on The Athletic today. I'm sure you can't guess how that went.
One guy was like, the guy I cover should be the winner. And then the other guy was like, no, the guy I cover should be the winner. Is that, am I getting it
correct? You got the gist of it.
That's exactly. Yeah. Points aren't everything, obviously. But Artemi Panarin has 24 fewer points than Nikita Kucherov. You know?
Mm-hmm.
He's, the guy who's third in the league, this guy Connor McDavid, yeah, he's 18 points ahead of Artemi Panarin.
And it's one of those things where, like, the Rangers are the better team. So, I mean, does that make Panarin more valuable? But also, take Kucherov off the Lightning, they probably miss the playoffs, whereas the Rangers would not, so.
I'll split the difference with you, and I'll say Nathan MacKinnon has 122 points.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it's MacKinnon.
It does, and I'm shocked. I really thought, like, it seemed like a lot of the PHWA people were like, MacKinnon's award this year. Lock it in. We're done. Back in, like, December. And I was like, let's give McDavid the runway on this one. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to – and, I mean, he has mostly made up the gap, but just not – and here's the thing. He's 5 points back. Two good Connor McDavid games, and we're like, wow, they're tied.
Yep.
You know? And – obviously, I think, you know, narratives come into play in this a lot of the time. And McDavid being like, oh, I played the first 12 games or whatever injured. The coach got fired. I turned the season around by going fucking psycho from December on. You know, I think there's a really good case there. But the MacKinnon, you know, he's had the narrative push from day one, basically.
Yeah. And there is sort of a feeling of, is this guy due? Is he, you know, all of that nonsense. It's, I mean, you could, I feel like if I had a ballot, I don't know if I do this year or not. I feel like it'd be MacKinnon, McDavid are almost neck and neck for me right now. Kucherov's right there. Panarin, sure. Matthews has fallen off. And then you get into, like, the goaltending and defensemen who technically are allowed to win this award. But
yeah.
And I mean, Connor Hellebuyck would be probably the prime candidate, although...
It would be Hellebuyck and Quinn Hughes would be the only two non-forwards I'd really give serious consideration for.
I think that sounds right.
And you know, I feel like earlier this year there was a decent amount of Barkov, and like there was a point where I would have straight up argued Barkov deserved it, But obviously, he just hasn't kept pace with these other guys.
Yeah. And he's already got the Selke.
I mean, he's got the Selke sewn up, man.
Yep.
Lock it in. Although, we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, I'm really interested to see how these last, whatever, 12 games go. Just because McDavid and McKinnon, by points, they're not that close. By points per game, I'm sure they are quite close. I guess that's something I can look up very quickly on NHL.com/stats. But let's see here. Points per game. The leader is Kucherov at 1.76. But McDavid is ahead of McKinnon by 0.03. So. Yeah, there's an argument to be made either way, and this is a classic. Usually I'm like, well, you can't give the award to that guy. Not a bad answer here between the two of them this year, I'd say.
Yep, I would agree.
But yeah, for now, I think, you know, barring McDavid going psycho down the stretch, which, again, extremely in the realm, and it's just as likely that McKinnon does the same thing.
Interesting that, like, both of those. I mean, I guess Edmonton is going to potentially have a bit of that. Well, we wouldn't have made the playoffs if it wasn't for our guy.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Both McDavid and McKinnon have got teammates having monster seasons as well, which in
theory. And so does Kucherov to a lesser extent, obviously.
To a lesser extent. That's like, I mean, McKinnon's got not just Cale Makar, but Mikko Rantanen. Obviously.
Oh, I was thinking of Rantanen. It didn't even occur to me about Makar. Yeah. So yeah.
Plus Zach Hyman. Whereas Kucherov, like, you do have to scroll a little bit to get down to Brayden.
Oh yeah, he's got 43 more points than Brayden Point.
That is going to win the wild card. So there's a case to be made if you're a Lightning fan, especially that, hey, based on how this award is usually voted for, Kucherov should maybe be the front runner.
But. Totally. Yeah. Like I say, I think it's between. I'd look at a Kucherov win a little askance, honestly, okay. But nothing crazy versus, you know, McKinnon and McDavid, like, happy. You know, this is, if I may analogize it to the 2007, the cinema of 2007. This is There Will Be Blood versus No Country for Old Men. And then, like, Nikita Kucherov is Michael Clayton, where I'm like, yeah, but Michael Clayton kicks ass too, you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Sick movie. What am I going to say? But, yeah, that I got nothing bad to say about anyone in that top three. I do have a little bit to say about Artemi Panarin. Doesn't deserve it. Insane take.
Are you saying not the front runner?
Not the front runner. I'm going to be bold enough to go out on a limb and say the guy who's a distant fourth behind the top three in scoring doesn't deserve it. It shouldn't be the front runner. If you give him a top five vote, you know, go with God. That's fine by me. But, you know, at that point, what about David Pastrnak?
Mm-hmm.
Who is tied with Panarin in points and has more goals. Just something to think about. Anyway,
sure.
I mentioned it earlier. It feels like the Norris is the one that's really sewn up.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of been the two-man race all year, but it does really feel like it's a one and two, not a one.
One gap two, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And then gap three, where the three starts getting interesting, and is it a Bouchard, a Dobson? Like, some new names start filtering in.
And that's fun. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I got an idea for you, though. Victor Hedman. He's only having, like, one of the worst seasons of his career, but you got to think. How valuable is he, you know?
What about Drew Doughty?
Okay. A second career achievement. I mean, look, the number of years he played before he won his career achievement award has more than elapsed by now, I think. You know what I mean? Like, he played, what, 7-8 seasons before they were like, we got to give it to this guy. It's been probably about the same amount of time since he won. So he's due.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's got to be Quinn Hughes, right?
I would be very surprised if it was not.
Yeah. Cam Robinson.
As would Canucks fans, I'm sure.
Cam Robinson, my colleague at Elite Prospects, had a very interesting note about Filip Hronek, speaking of Canucks defensemen. He was like plus 32 in his first 36 games or something like that, and then plus 9 since then, or plus 1 or something. I don't remember the numbers now, but it was just like a precipitous drop off over his last like 30 games.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
I don't think he's winning the Norris.
No, I don't think so. But I mean, again, it's just a function of like how much Quinn Hughes was dragging him along early in the run there, I feel like.
Yep.
But yeah, I to me, it's a slam dunk for Quinn Hughes. Do you think there's any – we talked about Hellebuck in the Hart race. Do you think there's anything there for him in the Vezina, like to get challenged?
Boy, my initial answer is no, but let me jump in here and I mean,
you want me to hit you with some stats real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Third in the league in minutes played, according to Evolving Hockey. On an adjusted basis, he's faced the sixth most shots in the league. He's faced the fourth most expected goals in the league. He's allowed let's see here. Among like heavily used goalies, he's like 12th in goals against this season. But again, he's third in minutes and all this kind of thing. In games played, he's also third. That shouldn't be a surprise. And in goals saved above expected, he's plus 35.22. And the next closest guy is Jacob Markstrom at plus 31.22.
Wow. Okay. What site are you looking at for that?
This is Evolving Hockey.
Yeah, because Money Puck's numbers are significantly different, which tends
yeah,
to be
they,
the case. But,
yeah.
But still, Connor Hellebuck in top spot.
Head and shoulders
above. Thatcher
above,
Demko.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they have Demko fourth in GSACs.
Mm-hmm.
Markstrom, Bennington, then Demko.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd be very surprised because the thing you very often with the Vezina, we come down to some of the more modern stats versus the old school wins and games and minutes and all that. But in this mm-hmm. case, it certainly feels like both of those are converging on the same guy. So, it would be a surprise.
Yep. And given the Jets like season as a totality, I think there is like a real case. He will never win it, but I think there is a real MVP case.
He's going to be on some ballots.
Yeah, no, he often is. I feel like he'll like get a handful of fourth and fifth place votes, and then the rest is like, well, I mean forwards though, you know. I'm going to just look really quickly and see where he has finished in Hart voting. Sixth in the Hart voting a few years ago, 2020. 19th.
Won his Vezina.
Yep, 19th the following year and 11th last season. Third in the Vezina last year.
Okay.
Three-time Vezina finalist, one-time winner, probably definitely on the way to a fourth finalist, probably a second win.
Mm-hmm.
How many goalies have won two Vezinas? There can't be that many.
There's, I think there's more than you think.
Really?
But it's a pretty elite group. Like it,
interesting.
It's, you don't get a lot of, like you're well into the slam dunk Hall of Fame type guys.
Yeah.
With the exception of Tim Thomas, I guess would be the one. Sergei Bobrovsky's on that list as well, which is
that's true.
Potentially interesting, but yeah, it's not.
Looks like 21 guys have won it more than once.
That sounds about right. And that includes a couple of guys where the Vezina, remember, was basically the Masterton. Like,
right. Yeah.
Bunny LaRocque did not win four Vezinas as the best goalie in the league.
Yeah. Tiny Thompson I'm seeing here. Probably.
Tiny Thompson may have been, but way back then, because I mean that was back when goalies couldn't stand up. So,
I mean, this is
couldn't legally. as opposed to just right. couldn't do it like they couldn't in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, Tiny Thompson, the last year of Tiny Thompson's career was the 39-40 season. So, yeah. You know, they weren't voting on it.
And you know what's funny about Tiny Thompson is...
he's actually one of the tallest guys in the world.
He was 5'10", and his name was Tiny, ironically, because he was such, right. he was such a monster. They were like, we'll call him Tiny, this guy who's a 5'10 goaltender.
Oh, well. That rocks. Hell yeah. So, yeah, you know, again, feels sewn up. The Calder, do we want to get into it?
We can. I mean, the push is coming hard for Minnesota. Are you buying this at all, that Connor Bedard has any sort of thing to worry about?
I'm buying it insofar as I think him missing the games hurts him, for sure, mm-hmm. right? But... you know, if it's just purely, I don't know. This is a who is the most outstanding rookie?
Yes.
Right?
Not the most valuable and not who will have the best career.
Obviously not. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which means it's also not like who would you trade for who? We all agree that, you know, Connor Bedard is the first pick if we're drafting rookies, redrafting them this year. But Brock Faber being the other guy.
Yeah, well, I guess we should mention
as a candidate.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, I hate this because because it's a forward versus a defenseman. Like this is where all the if you actually watch the team takes.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But Brock Faber's been fantastic.
Yeah, of course he has.
But I still.
No one is arguing to the contrary.
Yeah.
Despite what some people might have you believe. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, to me, like, who is the most outstanding with the understanding that I consider staying healthy, even if it's like a freak accident, has to be kind of considered a skill because yeah. we talk about it with like, oh, he would have been a Hall of Famer if he hadn't, you know, had all those knee injuries catch up to him late in his career or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you do have to consider that a skill a little bit. But with that having been said, who's the most outstanding rookie? I guess the guy who rocks and like is the only reason Chicago has won any games at all this year.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
It gets into the talent surrounding him. And, you know, a lot of people are pointing out that Connor Bedard's basically playing on a glorified AHL team. Whereas
yes.
the Wild are a playoff bubble team. And then, of course, it flips to, yeah, but would they be if they didn't have this kid playing 25 minutes a night on the blue line? And
here is how I know that all the Brock Faber arguments, like, and the people making them know it's bullshit. Okay. Connor Bedard's a minus 37.
Uh-huh. Yep. Sure is.
I'm going to hit you with this one, man. Shut the fuck up. Yeah. Like, that's mm-hmm. ridiculous to say that shit. It's so stupid. And you know it's stupid because you only use plus minus when you know the argument is bullshit. Or mm-hmm. you want to bolster a bullshit argument is maybe a better way of saying it, right?
Yeah.
Because we're going to look. Does Connor Bedard... he's not going to win the Selke, obviously, right? Like, nobody's saying, like, he's actually a really elite defender and you know, things have just broken against him or whatever. Like, I'm sure his fucking on-ice save percentage is .832, right? I mean, what are we talking about here, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just like, come on, man. You know, again, anytime you say plus minus, you have to couch it in. Look, is that a real stat that counts? No.
No.
But in this case, I'm going to actually pretend it does.
We should point out, like, Bedard's numbers are not... they're not so great that he does run away with this, I don't think. Like, he's not...
no, that's why it's a conversation, for sure.
He's not at a point a game, although he's getting there. He's having his best month of his career right now. Which may be a case of just sort of running away from the pack at the end. But
right.
we'll see. But
yeah, I can
already tell that a lot of Minnesota fans have already made up their minds to die mad about this one. So
of course. And again, How you know the plus minus thing? I think I just said he's a minus 37. 11 of those goals were seemingly like empty netters or something like that, because at 5-on-5, he's quote unquote only a minus 26. It's still bad, of course, obviously. But like, am I sitting there going, and obviously that's his fault? You know, I mean, come on, man. By the way, I just looked it up. 879 is his on-ice save percentage.
Yeah, well,
let's get that up to 900 and see how things work out. You know what I mean?
I just think
if you're being like, look at his plus minus, you know the argument's stupid. You're just being like, but the guy I like though.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, it'll be interesting. I can see it going either way. But yeah, anyway, Selke.
I think Barkov's going to win, but this is the time of year where there's usually one player, sometimes a couple of players, emerging as like the consensus, I guess I would say, narrative-based favorites. And then at the end of the year, a lot of people start putting out like a deeper dive into the numbers, and sometimes that shifts views around. But
well, to that point, I just sorted by defensive goals above replacement from Evolving Hockey, and again, like, is that a hard and fast stat? No, but it just is like summarizing a lot of bigger numbers to one single one, or you know, more disparate numbers, I guess you'd say. You know who is second in the league in defensive impact among forwards?
I do not.
Jason Robertson.
Ooh.
There's a guy. Really? Now, this is a guy who also has a ton of points. Right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think at any point is a.
Yeah. I'll just read you the top five in, or we can go beyond that if you want. The top five in defensive impact among forwards: Joel Armia, Jason Robertson, Tyson Forrester, Sasha Barkov, Jordan Martinook. The thing with this award is they give it to guys who have a lot of points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyson Forrester, last I looked, not exactly lighting it up out there. Yep. So if you want to say it's down to Barkov versus Robertson, obviously, Barkov has the inside track reputationally, and also because he's a center and wingers tend not to win this award. But Jason Robertson's making a case for himself in a way that...
He might be making a case for future Jason Robertson.
That, I mean,
more so than...
What do I always say about this award? There's like a 2 or 3 year lag time on it. Did you deserve this 2 years ago? Here it is. It's all yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jason Robertson, congratulations on winning the 2026 Selke Award. My hat's off to you. And look, if Barkov wins it, I'm not going to be like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, he's fucking Sasha Barkov. That's all fine by me. You know, I am curious, you know, who the other finalist is, because name brand players who are actually good all 200 feet of the ice, like Connor Garland is seventh. Do you think they're going to give Connor Garland's going to get Selke shine this year?
Not this year.
No.
Not much of it.
No. And then like guys who don't have like negative offensive impacts, like Garnet Hathaway, basically there's a lot of Philly guys on this list. And I wonder if they would do anything to just be like, Sean Couturier, come on down. I know you were a healthy scratch a little while ago and we're all
mad about
that.
We already did the Sean Couturier. Look how that worked out.
Yeah. He got healthy scratched. The most illegal thing you can do to a hockey player. Yeah. I don't know. That to me, I was just like, we really have to care about this? We have to have a national conversation about healthy scratching Sean Couturier?
I don't know. Absolutely. Yes, we do.
Okay, let's do it. I don't care.
Okay.
Next question.
Good chat.
Thanks. And then we'll wrap it up with what I think is honestly the most fascinating awards race out of all of them, the Jack Adams Award.
Yep.
This could go... like 8 different ways. I think we talked about this earlier this season, but now that we're into the home stretch here, it's like more interesting somehow.
Yeah. The Tortorella push is interesting. I wonder if the Couturier thing hurt him more than it helped. Not that he would care, of course, but
of course, yeah.
I think that sort of put a lot of people into the back. Well, I'm saying a lot of people. It's the broadcasters on this one, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So it is a media. It is a narrative based thing. I still think if Philly makes the playoffs, I mean, that really feels like to me that if Philly makes the playoffs by 1 point versus misses by 1 point, is all the difference on Tortorella being a candidate or not.
Oh, I think he's kind of a candidate regardless, whether he went. But here's the thing. What if the Washington Capitals finish ahead of them?
Yeah.
A team that was dead in the water earlier this season. They're
a lot of people having to look up who the coach of the Capitals is right now.
That's what I mean. And it's a first-year guy. They love giving it to first-year guys. Or like maybe first 2 years or something. But they do it a lot.
Especially first-year guys on teams that nobody thought were going to be good. Because we can't all be wrong. There's no way.
No.
We're so smart. No. It just has to be that the coach did a phenomenal job.
I could see an argument for Paul Maurice if they win the President's Trophy. Mm-hmm.
Chris Knobloch will get some.
Absolutely.
Some votes.
Speaking of first year guys, Peter Laviolette.
Peter Laviolette will get some votes.
For sure. I think
it would have been interesting if the Islanders made the playoffs to see if Patrick Roy got.
Yeah.
But obviously.
Bad news.
Yeah. If they don't make the playoffs, it's a non-factor.
Yeah. I think whoever wins the West, like their coach is going to get a lot of shine. Rick Tocchet, obviously, regardless of whether they win the West, will get a lot of votes, I think. Trying to think if there's anybody else. I'm just thinking like whoever wins the you know who would be an interesting candidate? Andrew Brunette.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna make the playoffs. I shouldn't say nobody. A lot of people didn't think that, including me, didn't think the Predators were gonna make the playoffs. And if they did, it would be kind of sorrow.
Especially coming screaming down the stretch, right, the way they are.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And like, but my point is, Saros has been very good. He hasn't been like a Vezina guy, you know? And I just kind of thought if they were going to make the playoffs, he'd have to go 920. And yet here we are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool in my opinion that there's legitimately like seven different coaches where, again, I'd just be like, got to hand it to him, you know? What about Sheldon Keefe? You gonna?
I'm gonna say probably not.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it's really cool.
Next year in Pittsburgh, he might, but not.
Oh my God! Can you imagine if that's the fucking fix for Kyle Dubas? What if we bring in some guys played for Sault Ste. Marie? What do we think about that?
All Sioux.
That doesn't even work out for North Dakota anymore. You know what I mean?
No, it does not.
Hey, speaking of which, more NCAA CHL news over the weekend, as Elliot Friedman reported that during the GM meetings last week, was that 2 weeks ago now? Something like that. The NHL GMs were briefed on the situation with that by the league. For those who don't know or whatever, including, I'm sure, Sean, who doesn't care about this level of developmental hockey at all. Fine by me. Basically,
if there was team ever has a prospect, I promise I will get back into this.
There was a, you know what? Let me actually look up something really quickly on that front because I saw a college hockey stat. Okay. He is a Leafs prospect. I saw a college hockey stat about this guy. This guy, Vidi Mietinen. Plays for St. Cloud. Played like 150-something games in his college career. Didn't take a single penalty.
Mm.
Like, by far the most games ever by a college player with zero penalty minutes. Isn't that crazy?
That is impressive.
And, like, not a guy who, like, bottom of the lineup, he's playing 12 minutes a night guy. He was the best player on St. Cloud this year. Not a single penalty. You know what that means? Soft.
Yep. Doesn't want it.
Doesn't want it. Not going to the dirty areas. But yeah, that stat blew my fucking mind when I saw this over the weekend. But anyway, here nor there. NCAA, so when was this? Maybe like January, February, there started to be some rumors that the NCAA would in some way start allowing CHL players to play NCAA hockey. They currently are not allowed to because the CHL is considered a professional league because guys in the CHL are allowed to be sent to the CHL after having signed NHL contracts. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You with me so far? Mm-hmm. Okay. And the big reason that people at the time, again, a few months ago, thought this was like a possibility or something like that, was basically that a lot of stuff has changed in the NCAA over the last several years where, you know, guys can get paid, or guys and girls, you know, shout out Caitlin Clark and all this, can get paid for, like, you know, doing a local TV commercial or whatever. They could. It didn't used to be that way. They can use their name, image, and likeness to promote things, make money in a way mm-hmm. that they couldn't before. Basically, the NCAA started losing a lot of lawsuits in the last few years. Is how this is all shaking out. And there has been some thought that the same idea would apply to CHL players. That in order to get out in front of a lawsuit, the NCAA would just allow this change to happen. I did a lot of reporting on this. I talked to a lot of college hockey coaches over the course of a few weeks, again, back in like January and February. And the consensus that seems to have emerged among coaches I talked to, many of whom were in favor of such a change, fewer of whom were against it, was basically that this isn't going to happen this year, but it is going to happen at some point. Again, probably because the NCAA's hand gets forced.
Okay.
Do you have any questions so far?
No, I'm okay. Furiously taking notes, but.
So I guess I'll quote what Elliot said on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. The NCAA is actively considering removing all restrictions for CHL players to play in the NCAA after their CHL careers are done. The deal could affect a lot of things. The NHL-CHL agreement. Also, for example, if you get drafted from the CHL, NHL teams hold your rights for 2 years. If you get drafted out of the USHL or NCAA, they hold your right for 4 years. So that would all have to be collectively bargained with the players.
Yep.
So they expanded on this on 32 Thoughts yesterday. And basically, they were saying, like, people like me, when I'm saying this isn't going to happen, that's because I'm talking to NCAA coaches only. And there are enough NCAA coaches who don't want it to happen that they're kind of, like, speaking it into existence a little bit.
Okay.
Which is, to a certain extent, true. The vehemence with which certain coaches pushed back on this, though, made me go, oh, they really don't want this to happen. And
now,
I think
in hockey, like, how much influence do the coaches have?
The reason that it hasn't happened yet is because the coaches don't want it to happen. My understanding is the NCAA is a little more hands-off with hockey than it is with other sports. And so it's kind of what it's always been is, like, you guys get to decide. If you don't want this to be – if you want to say this is a pro league, it's a pro league. That's – we're not going to – like, we, the NCAA's, like, highest-ranking governing bodies or whatever, that's – we're leaving that up to you. And what – you know, if there's a lawsuit, those governing bodies would be like, it's not up to you anymore, is basically what would happen. Mm-hmm. So – my understanding is that the coaches are going to have another vote on. They vote on this pretty frequently, and it's always a no. And What's interesting is, I think Marek said it on 32 Thoughts yesterday. It's only like 14, 15, 16 coaches who are like against it. But these are the coaches at the biggest programs that wield the most political influence. You know, your Big Ten teams are, broadly speaking, going to be against this. Broadly speaking, I didn't ask every coach in college hockey, so I don't know what their personal opinion is. But it tends to be the bigger schools that attract the younger prospects. I don't know. I'm just going to say schools that get the younger prospects. I don't know how these individual coaches feel about it necessarily. I either do or don't know, but these are the kinds of schools we're talking about. Let's put it that way. Your BC, BU, Michigan, Minnesota, you know, that kind of thing. The guys that they get elite 18-year-olds or draft eligible players. Those are the teams that would generally be against it. And the teams that recruit 19, 20, 21-year-olds, they would be for it. Broadly speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, when these votes have taken place, they usually get voted kind of along conference lines. So if you're in a conference with BC, BU, Michigan, North Dakota, Denver, etc., you just will tend to vote with those bigger schools. Now, there could be a break this year where the coaches at the other schools, they see the way the wind is blowing and they go, you know what? We're not voting as a block anymore. We're actually going to vote in favor of this. The coaches I talk to don't anticipate it happening this spring. If it's purely left up to a coach's vote. Whether it does go through, I would think that would be the NCAA kind of leaning on the coaches a little bit, if that makes sense.
It does.
The other thing to say here is, if I can say the quote that Elliot said again, he said like that those players would come to the NCAA after their CHL careers were over. That's Elliot talking to CHL and Hockey Canada people, in my opinion, because if the NCAA says we're going to let major junior players play here, what's going to happen is they're not going to be like, and it'll be certain guys, of course. It'll just be a blanket thing, right? CHL doesn't want to lose like 19 and 20-year-old players because those tend to be some of the best players in their rosters every year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys that are coming off their draft year, for example, or maybe even 2 years removed from their draft year at 19. Those are the best players in the CHL on a pretty consistent basis. And the CHL, of course, doesn't want to lose those guys to the NCAA. But the NCAA would, of course, want to get those guys because they're the best players. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, to me, again, this is just my opinion, but we are talking about basically the CHL would just become kind of on the same level as the USHL. Just like the Canadian equivalent of the USHL, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it would, I think, greatly diminish the quality of the CHL, which, again, they don't want to happen. And so they're like, well, look, you know, maybe we could negotiate something. The NCAA would, just from talking to people, I don't think the NCAA would be fucking open to negotiating anything. There's nothing for them to talk about, in their opinion. It's either a blanket thing, all or nothing, right? And the only thing that this would do that could negatively affect the NCAA, in my opinion, again, is, you know, now a Macklin Celebrini doesn't have to go play in the USHL. He can play for whoever, Everett in the WHL instead. I think we talked about this a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if he plays a year or 2 years in Everett, suddenly it's a lot harder to leave Everett to go to BU. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a negative thing. And that's what basically every coach I talked to brought up, is that that's why the bigger schools are against it, is like, we don't get Nolan Power necessarily in college hockey. We don't get Macklin Celebrini. We don't get Adam Fantilli necessarily. the American players, they kind of think would still lean the college route anyway. But with Canadians or Artem Levshunov, who is the best player for Michigan State, and he's draft eligible, and he's, as you can guess by the name, Russian. He probably goes CHL as opposed to the NCAA route, if that's an if that's a thing. But you know, it's all unknowns. So I just wanted to again give that update because I know that it there's not really anything to update except that if the NHL is saying to GMs you should be prepared for this, they maybe see the way the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
But again, one of the things a coach said to me, because I brought up the threat of a lawsuit, and he said, well, who's going to fucking do it? Well, he didn't say fucking. I said fucking. He's like, who's going to do it, though? Like, who's going to be the guy that sues us? And what a friend of mine who is also a college hockey reporter said was basically like, it wouldn't be a guy. It would be like a class action suit.
Okay.
And like, for example, I don't know if people have been following, there's like a push to have like a CHL players union, basically. And if that becomes a thing, that's who's going to sue the NCAA.
Right. But that would be a little ways away.
Yeah. That, and again, so again, I don't think this is happening this year. Again, the fact that the NHL is saying like, be prepared for it, that is something that definitely piques my interest and makes me go, maybe it's closer than I think. But again, a lot of the coaches I talked to said kind of like, I don't think it'd get voted through this year, but next year, kind of like, you know, just the passage of time, the more time goes on, the more threat there is of that lawsuit coming to fruition from somebody. And so like, The NCAA might just preemptively get in front of it, which is definitely a possibility. But I think, generally speaking, I do still think they'd leave it up to the coaches.
Okay.
For now. Does that all make sense?
Situation to watch. Yeah, no, it does.
It would completely change the development system in the hockey world forever.
Yep.
I think it was Jeff said this yesterday. It would effectively put the NCAA as the number one development league in the world. You can make the argument that it's kind of neck and neck right now with the CHL. If this change happens, no question, it's the NCAA.
Yeah.
Because again, it would just turn the CHL into a glorified USHL. That you can send some signed players back to, which I don't think you can. I'm 95% sure you can't in the USHL. So there you go.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And hey, if you like NCAA talk, we're gonna do. I'm gonna do a ton of it on the mailbag this week on the Patreon. So, you know. You might find that to be worth $5. We got a lot of questions about it, so I'm going to do like an NCAA corner, and Sean can feel free to participate or sign off at his leisure. We lost Chris Simon since the last time we did a podcast.
Yeah, tough circumstances. That news broke pretty much right around the time that we were had finished up the last one.
Yeah.
And not a lot of information quite yet about exact circumstances, but yeah, it's not good all the way around. It was only 52.
Brutal.
Family has confirmed that he is believed to have taken his own life.
Ugh.
And obviously the CTE discussion is springing up again, and rightly so. And the NHL continues to refuse to acknowledge.
The science isn't in yet, you know?
Yeah. Science is never settled until it says what the lawyers want it to say.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think either one of us really have a ton more to add to that, but we did want to at least at least mention it, because we didn't get to talk about it last time. And Chris Simon is a hell of a player, man.
He was, fun player back in the day. Yep.
And you know, he was a hell of an enforcer, and that was his primary role. But he could play some too.
Yeah.
This including, you know, famously 29 goals in a season, which in the dead puck era, that was no joke. So
nope.
Good player playing a very tough role, and you can just offer your condolences to friends and family, and just a terrible situation all around.
Absolutely. On that note, let's get to the plugs. Let's do it.
Yeah, you can find me at The Athletic, including my still new-ish podcast with Sean Gentile.
Wait a second.
Which runs on Wednesdays. I'll have... you can find my written work there. I believe we have one of our occasional dollar a month offers now. As always, it only works if you click on my articles. If you click on anyone else's, mm-hmm. you get charged double. I've got... I think I'm going to do a salary cap court tomorrow. Haven't done one of those.
Hell
in a while.
Yeah.
So time to bring that gimmick back.
Love salary cap court.
See where it leads us.
For me, you know what it is at this time of year, folks. I am neck deep in NCAA tournament coverage. Tournament starts on Thursday. Do you have any questions for me about the NCAA tournament, Sean? I can answer.
No, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what's gonna happen.
Yeah, the number one Boston College Eagles are going to fucking annihilate everybody they play. Yeah, that does sound about right. You nailed it once again. This is why he was one of the smartest guys in the biz, folks. I'm really looking forward to it, of course. And over at epringside.com, I will have basically my boss asked me what the content schedule looked like, and I typed it all up, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm signing myself to write 18 articles in like a week and a half.
Oh, fun.
Yep. Really. And many of them quite long. Stupid guy. Don't. Yep. I always say it, folks.
I'd have done that if I were you.
No. Work smarter, not harder, you know? All this stuff about hard work is its own reward. That's bullshit.
Yeah, nonsense.
You know what's its own reward? Sitting on the couch.
That's right.
You know what I mean? So, go over there. Check all that out. Use the code ILOVEEP to sign up for an annual subscription, and they will tack 3 extra months on at the end. Absolutely zero extra dollars for you. So that's very worth it, in my opinion, especially with the draft coming up and everything. Even if you don't like my stuff, all the other very smart people who work for Elite Prospects will be working very, very hard in the coming weeks and months leading up to the draft. And then, head over to patreon.com/pucksoup. Me and Sean just did a bonus episode yesterday where we were forced to name one player from every team that we like and one player from every team that we don't like.
That's right.
And wouldn't you know it, people were shocked. There were a bunch of teams where I was like, I don't dislike anybody on this team.
Yeah, that was shocking.
I had to I guess I don't like this guy because I think he's overrated or whatever. But that's the closest I could come on. I don't know, probably like half the teams in the league, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why? Mr. Positivity right here.
That's it. You're a lover, not a fighter.
That's exactly right. Check all that out, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.